I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today's topic concerns an 11-year-old girl who died of diabetes. The parents of an 11-year-old girl who died of treatable diabetes were charged with reckless homicide as they refused to get her medical help but instead relied on prayer to save her. Two parents who prayed as their 11-year-old daughter died of untreated diabetes were charged with second-degree reckless homicide. Family and friends had urged Dale and Leilani Newman to get help for their daughter, but the criminal complaint said the father considered the illness a test of faith, and the mother never considered taking the girl to a doctor because she thought her daughter was under a spiritual attack. Marathon County District Attorney Jill Falstead said, "It is very surprising and shocking that she wasn't allowed medical intervention. Her death could have been prevented." Madeline Newman died March 23rd on Easter Sunday. Her parents were told the body would be taken to Madison for an autopsy the next day. The medical examiner wrote in a report that the family responded, "You won't need to do that. She will be alive by then." An autopsy determined that Madeline died from undiagnosed diabetic ketoacidosis, which left her with too little insulin in her body. Court records said she likely had some symptoms of the disease for months. The Newmans each face up to 25 years in prison if convicted. The couple and their attorney did not immediately return messages left Monday by the Associated Press. Falstead said the Newmans have cooperated with investigators and they are not under arrest. She said they have agreed to make an initial court appearance. Randall Wormgoor, a friend of the Newmans, told police that Dale Newman led Bible studies at his business, Monkey Mo Coffee Shop, and believed physical illness was due to sin, curable by prayer and by asking for forgiveness from God. Wormgoor said he and his wife Althea were at the Newman home when Madeline, called Kara by her parents, died. Wormgoor, boy, there's a guy who really needs to change his name, said he had urged the father to seek medical help and was told the illness was a test of faith for the Newman family and asked the Wormgoors to join them in praying for Kara to get well. Althea Wormgoor said she implored the parents to seek medical help for the girl. Leilani Newman, the mother, age 40, told the Associated Press previously she had never expected her daughter to die. "The family believes in the Bible, which says healing comes from God. But they have nothing against doctors," she said. Dale Newman, the father, age 46 and a former police officer, has said he has friends who are doctors and started CPR as soon as the breath of life left his daughter's body. According to court documents, Leilani Newman said in a written statement to police that she never considered taking the girl, who was being homeschooled, to a doctor. "We just thought it was a spiritual attack and we prayed for her. My husband Dale was crying and mentioned taking Kara to the doctor, and I said, 'The Lord's going to heal her,' and we continued to pray." The father told investigators he noticed his daughter was weak and slower for about 2 weeks, but he attributed it to symptoms of the girl reaching puberty. A day before Madeline died, according to the criminal complaint, the father wrote an email with the headline, "Help, our daughter needs emergency prayer." It said his daughter was very weak and pale at the moment, with hardly any strength. The girl's grandmother, Evelani Gordon, told police that she learned her granddaughter could not walk or talk on March 22nd and advised Leilani Newman to take the girl to a doctor. Gordon eventually contacted a daughter-in-law in California who called police on a non-emergency line to report the girl was in a coma and needed medical help. An ambulance was dispatched shortly before some friends in the home called 911 to report the girl had stopped breathing. One relative told police that the girl's mother believed she died because the devil is trying to stop Leilani from starting her own ministry. The Newmans said they moved to Weston, a suburb of Wausau in central Wisconsin, from California about 2 years ago, to open the coffee shop and be closer to other relatives. The couple has three other children, aged 13 through 16. They are now living with relatives. Leilani Newman has said that the family does not belong to an organized religion or faith. Everest Metro Police Chief Dan Vergen said the parents once belonged to the Lighthouse Pentecostal Church, but later became what he called religious isolationists, involved in a prayer group of five people. He said they have gone out on their own. They have a very narrow view of Scripture, and I would say not many people hold to that narrow view. In March, an Oregon couple who belonged to a church that preaches against medical care and believes in treating illness with prayer were charged with manslaughter and criminal mistreatment in the death of their 15-month-old daughter. The state medical examiner's office said the toddler died March 2nd of bronchial pneumonia and a blood infection that could have been treated with antibiotics. Well, I have a few comments to make about this story, but nothing that can really do it justice. I think we've discovered an entirely new meaning for the term complementary and alternative medicine. Thankfully, the other kids have been removed from that home, but who knows how much damage has already been done to them. According to the Chicago Tribune, dated May 21, 2008, approximately one child per month over the last 25 years has died in a similar manner, parental neglect based on faith. A person identified in the article only as Swan, a Christian Scientist mother who also lost her son to meningitis because she treated him with faith instead of medicine, said that about 75% of parents charged with this crime actually get convicted. She also said that 90% of the children who died could have been saved with proper medical intervention. And that's really the crux of this whole story. 90% of all those children could be living today. And the only reason that they're not is because their parents decided to trust their religious beliefs over modern medicine. If they want to trust their religious beliefs in their own health decisions, that's why you're an adult with the freedom to do whatever you want. You can screw your life up however you want. But when it starts affecting other people, especially your own children who will never get the chance to live because of your decisions, that changes the entire complexion. As Carpal Tunnel pointed out, they did get separate attorneys, so it sounds like they're going to throw each other under the bus on this one. They apparently are not members of the Church of Christ Scientists. However, most of these cases usually come from that religion. So what I've done is I've gone to their official website and I've copied down a few things that you might find of interest that they say about themselves. Overview. Christian Science, discovered by Mary Baker Eddy, is a universal, practical system of spiritual, prayer-based Christian healing, available and accessible to everyone. Christian Science is fully explained in Mary Baker Eddy's primary text on spirituality and healing, called Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures. Christian Science has helped many people find better emotional and physical health, answers to life's deepest issues, and progress on their spiritual journeys. Many Christian Scientists are members of the First Church of Christ, Scientist. But membership in the church is not a prerequisite for the practice of Christian Science. Healthcare decisions are always a matter of individual choice. Their next section, Basic Ideas of Christian Science. God is divine love, father-mother, supreme. Well, if you can figure out what that means, let me know. Next, the true nature of each individual as a child of God is spiritual. Once again, let me know if that has any meaning to you other than gibberish. Third, God's infinite goodness realized in prayer heals. Well, doesn't seem to apply to all the kids that we've been talking about, does it? Christian Science practitioners and Christian Science nurses. Christian Science practitioners are available to help bring healing to others through prayer. Christian Science nurses are available to provide spiritual reassurance and skillful physical care to those relying on Christian Science for healing. I find that strange. Why would you need skillful physical care if you're relying on God to heal you? Maybe someone can explain that one while you're explaining the other things. I get confused easily, as you can tell. Christian Science, primary class instruction. It's a 2-week course in spiritual healing based on the ideas in Mary Baker Eddy's book. Then they list Christian Science publications, the Bible lesson, the weekly and monthly magazines, and finally, the international newspaper that we've all heard of, the Christian Science Monitor, has provided delivery of world news with journalistic integrity since 1908. Well, that should comfort all those kids. Who is Mary Baker Eddy? Well, she was born in 1821 and died in 1910. At age 58 in 1879, she founded her church. And she didn't have as much luck in marriage, as she got married 3 times, and that means she had to have been divorced at least twice. But now I want to give some credit where credit is due, as much as I hate to do this. In 1921, this would be, I believe, 11 years after her death, on the 100th anniversary of Eddy's birth, a 100-ton, 11-foot granite pyramid was dedicated on the site of her birthplace in Bow, New Hampshire, a gift from the Freemasons. It was later dynamited by order of the church's board of directors. Also demolished was Eddy's former home in Pleasant View, as the board feared that it was becoming a place of pilgrimage. Although Eddy allowed personal praise in her lifetime for various reasons, including for publicity and fundraising, the church shuns both the cult of personality and religious reliquaries. And if you look up reliquary in the dictionary, as I did, or as I had to, it is a container or shrine in which sacred relics are kept. You won't hear this often, but this is one time when I am proud of religion for shunning the cult of personality and not using her little pyramid and her home as a place of pilgrimage, which, as many other religions have done, is a great way to bring in money. And they didn't do that. So kudos to the Church of Christ Science. Now I'm going to continue something I started last week, and that is famous skeptical quotes. Today, what I have picked 3 famous quotes. However, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some background on these people to put with the quotes so you'll know where they're coming from. Our first quoter is Ambrose Bierce. Born in 1842, died in 1914. He was an American writer who died while traveling with Mexican rebels during their revolution. So while the world was beginning World War I, Mexico had their own war going on inside their borders. And he was trying to cover the story, and they never did find out what happened to him. Ambrose Bierce, quote, definition of the verb to pray. To ask that the laws of the universe be annulled in behalf of a single petitioner, confessedly unworthy. Well put. For our second famous skeptical quote, we go way back in time to ancient Greece, to a man named Anaxagoras. born in 500 BC and lived a pretty long time for those days. He died in 428 BC, 72 years later. That would be a full lifespan even now with our modern medicine. Anaxagoras brought philosophy and the spirit of scientific inquiry from Ionia to Athens. His observations of the celestial bodies and the fall of meteorites led him to form new theories of the universal order. He attempted to give a scientific account of eclipses, meteors, rainbows, and the sun, which he described as a mass of blazing metal larger than the Peloponnese. The heavenly bodies, he asserted, were masses of stone torn from the earth and ignited by rapid rotation. However, these theories brought him into collision with the popular faith. Anaxagoras's views on such things as heavenly bodies were considered dangerous. About 450 BC, Anaxagoras was arrested by Pericles' political opponents. Pericles was his friend, so these political opponents of Pericles use Anaxagoras as a pawn. And so his opponents arrested him on a charge of contravening the established religion. It took Pericles' power of persuasion to secure Anaxagoras' release. Even so, he was forced to retire from Athens to Lampsacus in Ionia, about 433 BC. He died there about 5 years later. Citizens of Lampsacus erected an altar to mind and truth in his memory and observed the anniversary of his death for many years. Now for the quote of Anaxagoras. Everything has a natural explanation. The moon is not a god, but a great rock, and the sun a hot rock. Okay, so he wasn't perfect on that one, but considering that was 500 years BC, that's not bad. He got one out of two right. And that's probably as good as most people can do today with all the education and science we have going. Polls show that our population doesn't even know as much as he did even then. Okay, Carpal Tunnel Press. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena.
Thank you. And I really appreciate all you do with the show. And it's really, really useful for me.
Thank you.
The idea of healing through prayer doesn't just affect children when they're denied health care, denied medicine. In the case of, I believe it was in Texas, a woman who drowned all of her children due to the effects of untreated postpartum depression.
I remember that case.
And that was a case of where religious beliefs got in the way of medical treatment, which, you know, I think it was five children would be alive today if she had gotten treatment for postpartum depression.
And I think we know she's not the only person. She's just the most famous one that the media picked up on.
Yeah. And when the sad part of that is when the media picked up on it, the religious belief kind of got reported but glossed over, so that she was villainized and her husband was considered more of a victim because he had lost all of his children. And it was his belief that were to blame for their death as much as her actions.
And why do you think it was glossed over in the media? The part about the religious belief.
More than likely because the media does not want to offend their viewers. They don't want to offend viewers who could be mobilized to boycott advertisers, to boycott programming. Just, you know, it was a matter of, you know, you don't want to offend anyone.
I hope everyone who's listening and everyone who downloads this podcast heard his answer to that question. It was absolutely perfect. And what Carpal Tunnel just said is exactly what's going on. The media is not going to, they could care less about the truth. What they care about is survival. They're competing against other stations. They have to tell people what they want to hear. If they don't, people will go to the other channels that will tell them what they want to hear. So you're not going to hear necessarily the truth. You're going to hear what they think will draw viewers to their station, whether it be on the radio, the internet, or television. And why everyone needs to develop critical thinking skills is because it's the only way to protect yourself so that you will not be so gullible when the media does what it does. And I assume you agree with that.
Absolutely.
Did you see happen to see on the morning news James von Prague the other day?
No, I missed that one, but I heard about it.
You know who he is?
Unfortunately, yes.
For those people who don't know who he is, James von Prague is one of the most famous necromancers in the country. He talks to the dead. And he was on the Dr. Phil show, and I'm not going to discuss that right now because I'm saving that for a show in a couple weeks. But a couple days later, he shows up on the morning news. Now, when people turn on the news, you're not turning on an entertainment show. You're turning it on because you want to get the truth. You want to get news. And they had this guy on, and he was doing his cold reading technique, which is how those scam artists work. And there were three women that were news anchors that he was talking to. And he picked the one in the middle, and he was telling her things, just the kind of things they always do, making very general guesses and saying things that would be true of almost anyone. And he was telling the woman about her mother, her deceased mother, standing right behind her. And within about a minute, he had her in tears, and she was wiping her eyes. And all three of these news anchors were playing it straight as if this was all actually happening for real. I don't know how many of the three actually believed it or not, but they all had to go along with it because that's what the viewers want. That's what most of the viewers believe. And it's kind of pathetic, but that's the way our society is, and that's why it's so important for people to learn critical thinking skills. It's important to learn how these con artists work so that you know what they're doing.
Even a cold read, and that wasn't even a cold reading, you know, because he knew things about her. He went into that knowing he had a dead mother. Technically, he went into that as a hot reading.
You never cease to amaze me. You're right again. Because I was thinking the exact same thing. When he did it, I thought, well, if he knows who's going to be here. Of course he checked on her. You're right. It wasn't even a cold reading in her case. It was a hot reading. And for those of you out there who may download this and aren't familiar with the terms, a hot reading is when you know something about the person you're scamming. A cold reading is when you do it to a total stranger. And if you want to learn about how many of these scam artists work and the tricks they use to fool you, let me give you this website. It's very short. You should write this down. www.skeptic.com. Skeptic is S-K-E-P-D-I-C, short for Skeptical Dictionary. You can pick a letter of the alphabet, and you can be sure that for any letter of the alphabet, there will be many different subjects for which you can learn about various scams and hoaxes and frauds. And cold reading is a very interesting article that will teach you how psychics, necromancers, and all these other con artists get your money, give you false hope, and do all kinds of other damage. Go ahead, Carpal.
Another good website is philbrown.com. A lot of good information on cold reading there.
Okay, do you have that address?
Stopsylviabrown.com. I can't remember if her name is spelled with or without an E at the end or not.
Yes, it has an E at the end.
Yeah, you'll know you're there because there's the logo is a stop sign with a hand with really long fingernails.
Yeah, that's Robert Lancaster's site. And I sent him an email, as a matter of fact, because I thought I had some more ammunition for him to use against her. Sylvia Brown is a person who, like James von Prague, talks to the dead. What I'm doing here is I'm pulling up a reference out of the Bible. Did you have anything else you wanted to add while I'm embarrassing myself here?
Just a little bit of brief background on Sylvia Brown. She got famous by weekly appearances on the Montel Williams show and has made numerous predictions that were completely wrong.
You got that right. Okay, regarding Sylvia Brown, as Carpal Tunnel was stating, she is a well-known fraud who pretends to talk to the dead, and she charges $700 for 20 minutes. I don't know how much you people who are listening to this make, but she gets about $2,000 an hour for spewing out this crap. What really gets me, and this is what I sent to Robert Lancaster at StopSylviaBrown.com, was a couple of Bible verses. Because in our country, 75% of the United States is Christian. So most of the people that are paying Sylvia Brown thousands of dollars an hour have to be Christians. They were burning people like her at the stake a couple hundred years ago. Now they turn around in a very short period of time, and they can't throw enough money at her. She's a multimillionaire and famous wherever she goes. I don't know how Christians explain this, because in Exodus 22:18, it very clearly states, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live." This was the justification for the Salem witch burnings, for the European witch burnings. And while I'm really glad that Christians stopped burning innocent women, that's great. I don't want you to go back to that. However, you know, your Bible does tell you to do that. That's, after all, that's where you got it from. And then for people who have a question about, you know, what a witch is, in case you need it to be actually cleared up for you, go to Deuteronomy 18, verses 10 to 11. "There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or daughter pass through the fire, or that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer." The dictionary is right next to you. Necromancer. Talking to the dead. Get Sylvia Brown on the phone. She talks to the dead. She's a necromancer. She is being referred to in Deuteronomy by God himself. People like her, boy, if you could get the thousands and thousands of poor, innocent women that got burned and bring them back to life just for a few minutes and show them what we do to witches now. We give them mansions and fame and speaking engagements and anything she wants. I think they would roll over in their graves. So, make sure you, if you get a chance, to go visit that website that Carpal Tunnel told you about. It's certainly a good one, and it'll help save you a lot of money. Oh, Carpal, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
I think I've derailed you long enough.
It was a great contribution to the show. Glad you could join us.
I'm happy I could be here. Hopefully I'll be able to catch some more live shows.
Okay, let me go to my last quote here. Andre Gide, born 1869... died 1951. He was a French writer and winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1947. Guide's work can be seen as an investigation of freedom and empowerment in the face of moralistic and Puritan constraints, and gravitates around his continuous effort to achieve intellectual honesty. His self-exploratory texts reflect his search of how to be fully oneself, even to the point of owning one's sexual nature without at the same time betraying one's values. His political activity is informed by the same ethos, as suggested by his repudiation of communism. Now, his quote is very short and to the point, but very powerful, which is why it's on the list. Andre Gide, quote, "Believe those who are seeking the truth. Doubt those who find it."
Are you ready, Bruce?